Rodriguez checked the priming of a musket he had taken at random from the rack beside the stern cannon. He found the flint was worn and pitted, and therefore dangerous. Without a word, he hurled the musket at the gunner. The man just managed to catch it before the stock smashed into his face.
"Madonna, Signor Pilot!"
the man cried out.
"There's no need!"
"Listen, you motherless turd! The next time I find anything wrong with a musket or cannon during your watch, you'll get 50 lashes and lose 3 months' pay. Bosun!"
"Yes, pilot?"
Pizarro, the bosun, heaved his bulk nearer and scowled at the young gunner.
"Turn out both watches. Check every musket and cannon. Everything. Only God knows when we'll need them."
"I'll see to it, pilot."
The bosun shoved his face at the gunner.
"I'll piss in your grog tonight, Gomez, for all the extra work. And you'd better lap it up with a smile. Get to work."
There were 8 small cannon amidships on the main deck, 4 port and 4 starboard, and a bow chaser. Enough to beat off any uncannoned pirates, but not enough to press home and attack. The small frigate was 2-masted, called the Santa Luz. Rodriguez waited until the crews were at their tasks, then turned away and leaned on the gunwale. The castle glinted dully in the sun, the colour of old pewter, except for the dungeon with its blue and white walls and golden roofs. He spat into the water and watched the spittle to see if it would reach the jetty pilings, as he hoped, or go into the sea. It went into the sea.
"Pierce,"
he muttered to no one, wishing he had his own frigate, the Santa Maria, under him right now.
"God cursed bad luck that she's in Macau just when we need her."
"What's amiss, Captain General?"
he had asked a few days ago at Nagasaki, when he had been routed out of his warm bed in his house that overlooked the city and the harbour.
"I've got to get to Osaka at once,"
Ferreira had said, plumed and arrogant as any bantam cock, even at this early hour.
"An urgent signal's arrived from Delacqua."
"What's the matter now?"
"He didn't say. Just that it was vital to the future of the Black Ship." "Madonna, what mischief are they up to now? What's vital? Our ship's as sound as any ship afloat. Her bottom's clean and rigging perfect. Trade's better than we ever imagined, and on time. The monkeys are behaving themselves. Pigas Harima's confident, and..."
He stopped as the thought exploded in his brain.
"The Inglés. He's put to sea?" "I don't know, but if he has..."
Rodriguez had stared out of the great harbour mouth, half expecting to see Erasmus already blockading there, showing the hated flag of England, waiting there like a rabid dog against the day they'd have to put to sea for Macau and home.
"Jesu, Mother of God and All Saints, let that not happen!" "What's our fastest way? Lorja?"
"The Santa Luz, Captain General. We can sail within the hour."
"Listen, the Inglés can do nothing without men. Don't forget..." "Madonna, you listen. He can speak their gibberish now, eh? Why can't he use monkeys, eh? There are enough Chapo pirates to crew him 20 times over."
"Yes, but not gunners and not sailors as he'd need them. He's not got time to train Chapos. By next year, maybe, but not against us."
"Why, in the name of the Madonna and the saints, the priest gave him one of their dictionaries, I'll never know. Meddling bastards. They must have been possessed by the devil. It's almost as though the Inglés is protected by the devil. I tell you, he's just clever. There are many who've been here for 20 years and can't speak a word of Jap or gibberish, but the Inglés can, eh? I tell you, he's given his soul to Satan, and in return for the black arts, he's protected. How else do you explain it? How many years have you been trying to talk their tongue, and you even live with one? Lecce, he could easily use Chapo pirates." "No, Captain General, he's got to get men from here, and we're waiting for him, and you've already put anyone suspect in irons. With 20,000 cruzados in silver, and a promise about the black ship, he can buy all the men he needs, including the jailers, and the God-cursed jail around them. Cabron, perhaps he can buy you too.
Watch your tongue.
You're the motherless, milkless Spaniard, Rodriguez. It's your fault he's alive. You're responsible. Twice you let him escape.
The Captain General had squared up to him in rage.
You should have killed him when he was in your power.
Perhaps, but that's froth on my life's wake,
Rodriguez had said bitterly.
I went to kill him when I could. Did you? I've told you 20 times. Have you no ears? Or is Spanish tongue as usual in your ears as well as in your mouth?
His hand had reached for his pistol, and the Captain General had drawn his sword. Then the frightened Japanese girl was between them.
Please, Rotan, no Angus, no Quara, please, Christian, please.
The blinding rage had fallen off both of them, and Ferreira had said,
I tell you before God, the Inglés must be devil-spawned. I almost killed you, and you me, Rodriguez. I see it clearly now. He's put a spell on all of us, particularly you.
Now in the sunshine at Osaka, Rodriguez reached for the crucifix he wore around his neck, and he prayed a desperate prayer that he be protected from all warlocks and his immortal soul kept safe from Satan.
Isn't the Captain General right? Isn't that the only answer?
He reasoned again, filled with foreboding.
The Inglés's life is charmed. Now he's an intimate of the Archfiend Torrenaga. Now he's got his ship back, and the money back, and Waco, in spite of everything. And he does speak like one of them. And that's impossible, so quickly, even with the dictionary. But he did get the dictionary, and priceless help. Jesus, God, and Madonna, take the evil eye off me! Why'd you give the Inglés the dictionary, father?
He had asked Alviso at Mishima.
Surely you should have delayed that.
Yes, Rodriguez,
Father Alviso had told him confidently.
And I needn't have gone out of my way to help him. But I'm convinced there's a chance of converting him. I'm so sure. Torrenaga's finished now. It's just one man and a soul. I have to try to save him.
Priests, Rodriguez thought. Leche on all priests. But not on Del Aqua and Alvito. Oh, Madonna, I apologize for all my evil thoughts about him and the Father Alvito. Forgive me, and bury the Inglés somehow, before I have him in my sights. I do not wish to kill him because of my holy oath, even though, before thee, I know he must die quickly.
The duty helmsman turned the hourglass and rang 8 bells. It was high noon. Chapter 55. Marika was walking up the crowded sunlit avenue toward the gates in the cul-de-sac. Behind her was a bodyguard of 10 Browns. She wore a pale green kimono and white gloves, and a wide-brimmed dark green traveling hat, tied with a golden net scarf under her chin, and she shaded herself with an iridescent sunshade. The gate swung open, and stayed open. It was very quiet in the avenue. Greys lined both sides and all the battlements. She could see the Anjinsan on their own battlements, Yabu beside him, and in the courtyard, the waiting column with Kiri there, and the Lady Suzuko. All the Browns were in full ceremonials in the forecourt, under Yoshinaka, except 20 who stood on the battlements with Blackthorn, and 2 to each window, overlooking the forecourt. Unlike the Greys, none of the Browns had armor or carried bows. Swords were their only weapons. Many women, samurai women, were also watching, some from the windows of other fortified houses that lined the avenue, and some from battlements. Others stood in the avenue among the Greys, a few gaily dressed children with them. All of the women carried sunshades, though some wore samurai swords, as was their right if they wished. Kiyama was near the gate with 50 of his own men, not Greys.
Good day, sire,
Mariko said to him, and bowed. He bowed back, and she passed through the archway.
Hello, Kiri-chan,
Sazuko-chan. How pretty you both look. Is everything ready?
Yes, they replied with false cheeriness.
Good.
Mariko got into her open palanquin and sat stiff-backed.
Yoshinika-san, please begin.
At once the captain limped forward and shouted the orders. 20 Browns formed up as a vanguard and moved off. Porters picked up Mariko's curtainless palanquin and followed the Browns through the gate, Kiri's and Lady Sazuko's close behind, the young girl holding her infant in her arms. When Mariko's palanquin came into the sunlight outside their walls, a captain of grace stepped forward between the vanguard and the palanquin and stood directly in her way. The vanguard stopped abruptly. So did the porters.
Please excuse me, he said to Yoshinika, but may I see your papers?
So sorry, Captain, but we require none,
Yoshinika replied in the great silence.
So sorry, but the Lord General Ishido, Governor of the Castle, Captain of the Heir's Bodyguard, with the approval of the Regents, has instituted orders throughout the castle which have to be complied with.
Mariko said formally,
I am Toda Mariko no Buntaro, and I have been ordered by my liege lord, Lord Torinaga, to escort his ladies to meet him. Kindly let us pass.
I would be glad to, lady,
the samurai said proudly, planting his feet.
But without papers, our liege lord says no one may leave Osaka Castle. Please excuse me.
Mariko said,
Captain, what is your name, please?
Sumiyori Danzenji, lady, captain of the 4th Legion, and my line is as ancient as your own.
So sorry, Captain Sumiyori, but if you do not move out of the way, I will order you killed.
You will not pass without papers.
Please kill him, Yoshinika-san.
Yoshinika leaped forward without hesitation, his sword a whirling arc, and he struck at the off-balanced gray. His blade bit deep into the man's side and was jerked out instantly, and the second more vicious blow took off the man's head, which rolled in the dust a little way before stopping. Yoshinika wiped his blade clean and sheathed it.
Lead on,
he ordered the vanguard.
Hurry up!
The vanguard formed up again, and their footsteps echoing, they marched off. Then, out of nowhere, an arrow thwanged into Yoshinika's chest. The cortege lurched to a stop. Yoshinika tore at the shaft silently for a moment, then his eyes glazed, and he toppled. A small moan broke from Kiri's lips. A puff of air tugged at the ends of Mariko's gossamer scarf. Somewhere in the avenue, a child's cries were hushed. Everyone waited breathlessly.
Miyai Kazuko-san, Mariko called out. Please take charge.
Kazuko was young and tall and very proud, clean-shaven, with deep-set cheeks, and he came from the grouped Browns near Kiyama, who stood beside the gateway. He strode past Kiri's and Sazuko's litters to stand beside Mariko's and bowed formally.
Yes, lady. Thank you. You!
He shouted to the men ahead.
Move off!
Taut, some fearful, all frantic, they obeyed, and once again the procession began. Kazuko walking beside Mariko's litter. Then, 100 paces in front of them, 20 greys moved out of the massed ranks of samurai and stood silently across the roadway. The 20 Browns closed the gap. Then someone faltered, and the vanguard trickled to a stop.
Clear them out of the way!
Kazuko shouted. Immediately, one Brown leaped forward, and the others followed, and the killing became swift and cruel. Each time a grey fell, another would calmly walk out of the waiting pack to join his comrades in the killing. It was always fair, always evenly matched, man to man, now 15 against 15, now 8 against 8, a few wounded greys thrashing in the dirt, now 3 Browns against 2 greys, and another grey strode out, and soon it was 1 to 1, the last Brown, blood-stained and wounded, already victor of 4 duels. The last grey dispatched him easily and stood alone among the bodies and looked at Miyai Kazuko. All the Browns were dead. 4 greys lay wounded, 18 dead. Kazuko went forward, unsheathing his sword, in the enormous hush.
Wait, Mariko said. Please wait, Kazuko-san.
He stopped, but kept his eyes on the grey, spoiling for the fight. Mariko stepped out of the palanquin and went back to Kiyama.
Lord Kiyama, I formally ask you, please, to order those men out of the way.
So sorry, Toda-sama. The castle orders must be obeyed. The orders are legal. But, if you wish, I will call a meeting of the regents and ask for a ruling.
I am samurai. My orders are clear, in keeping with Bushido and sanctified by our code. They must be obeyed and overrule legally any man-made ordinance. The law may upset reason, but reason may not overthrow the law. If I am not permitted to obey, I will not be able to live with that shame.
I will call an immediate meeting.
Please excuse me, sire. What you do is your own business. I am concerned only with my lord's orders and my own shame.
She turned and went quietly back to the head of the column.
Kazuko-san, I order you, please, to lead us out of the castle.
He walked forward.
I am Mihai Kazuko, captain, from the Line Serrata, of Lord Toranaga's Third Army. Please get out of the way. I am Biwa Jiro, captain of Lord General Ishido's garrison. My life is worthless. Even so, you will not pass, the grey said.
With the sudden roaring battle cry of,
Toranaga!
Kazuko rushed to the fray. Their swords shrieked as the blows and counterblows were parried. The two men circled. The grey was good, very good, and so was Kazuko. Their swords rang out in the clash. No one else moved. Kazuko conquered, but he was very badly wounded, and he stood over his enemy, swaying on his feet. And with his good arm, he shook his sword at the sky, bellowing his war cry, gloating in his victory.
Toranaga!
There was no cheering at his conquest. All knew it would be unseemly in the ritual that enveloped them now. Kazuko forced one foot forward, then another, and stumbling, he ordered,
Follow me!
His voice crumbling. No one saw where the arrows came from, but they slaughtered him. And the mood of the Browns changed from fatalism to ferocity at this insult to Kazuko's manhood. He was already dying fast and would have fallen soon, alone, still doing his duty, still leading them out of the castle. Another officer of the Browns ran forward with 20 men to form a new vanguard, and the rest swarmed around Mariko, Kiri, and Lady Sazuko.
Forward!
The officer snarled. He stepped off, and the 20 silent samurai came after him. Like somnambulists, the porters picked up their burdens and stumbled around the bodies. Then ahead, 100 paces, 20 more greys with an officer moved silently from the hundreds that waited. The porters stopped. The vanguard quickened their pace.
Halt!
The officers bowed curtly to each other and said their lineage.
Please get out of the way! Please show me your papers!
This time, the Browns hurtled forward at once, with cries of,
Toranaga!
To be answered by,
Yeemon!
And the carnage began. And each time a grey fell, another would walk out coolly until all the Browns were dead. The last grey wiped his blade clean and sheathed it, and stood alone, barring the path. Another officer came forward with 20 Browns from the company behind the litters.
Wait,
Mariko ordered. Ashen, she stepped out of her palanquin and put her sunshade aside and picked up Yoshinika's sword, unsheathed it, and walked forward alone.
You know who I am? Please get out of my way.
I am Kojima Harutomo, 6th Legion, Captain. Please excuse me. You may not pass, lady,
the grey said with pride. She darted forward, but her blow was contained. The grey backed and stayed on the defensive, though he could have killed her without effort. He retreated slowly down the avenue, she following, but he made her work for every foot. Hesitantly, the column started after her. Again, she tried to bring the grey to battle, cutting, thrusting, always attacking fiercely. But the samurai slid away, avoiding her blows, holding her off, not attacking, allowing her to exhaust herself. But he did this gravely, with dignity, giving her every courtesy,
giving her the honour that was her due. She attacked again, but he parried the onslaught that would have overcome a lesser swordsman, and backed another pace. The perspiration streamed from her. A Brown started forward to help, but his officer quietly ordered him to stop, knowing that no one could interfere. Samurai on both sides waited for the signal, craving the release to kill. In the crowd, a child was hiding his eyes in his mother's skirts. Gently, she pried him away and knelt.
"Please watch, my son," she murmured. "You are samurai."
Mariko knew she could not last much longer. She was panting now from her exertions and could feel the brooding malevolence surrounding her. Then ahead and all around, greys began to ease away from the walls, and the noose around the column quickly tightened. A few greys walked out to try to surround her, and she stopped advancing, knowing that she could, too easily, be trapped and disarmed and captured, which would destroy everything at once. Now Browns moved up to assist her, and the rest took positions around the litters. The mood in the avenue was ominous now, every man committed, the sweet smell of blood in their nostrils. The column was strung out from the gateway, and Mariko saw how easy it would be for the greys to cut them all off if they wished, and leave them stranded in the roadway.
"Wait!" she called out.
Everyone stopped. She half bowed to her assailant, then head high, turned her back on him, and walked back to Kiri.
So sorry, but it is not possible to fight through these men at the moment," she said, her chest heaving. We must go back for a moment."
Sweat was streaking her face as she went down the line of men. When she came to Kiyama, she stopped and bowed.
"Those men have prevented me from doing my duty, from obeying my liege lord. I cannot live with shame, sire. I will commit seppuku at sunset. I formally beg you to be my second."
"No, you will not do this."
Her eyes flashed, and her voice rang out fearlessly.
"Unless we are allowed to obey our liege lord, as is our right, I will commit seppuku at sunset."
She bowed and walked toward the gateway. Kiyama bowed to her, and his men did likewise. Then all in the avenue and on the battlements and at the windows, all bowed to her in homage. She went through the archway, across the forecourt into the garden. Her footsteps took her to the secluded rustic little char house. She went inside, and once alone, she wept silently for all the men who had died. Chapter 56.
"Beautiful, eh?"
Yabu pointed below at the dead.
"Please?"
Blackthorn asked.
"It was a poem. You understand poem?"
"I understand word, yes."
"It was a poem, Anjin-san. Don't you see that?"
If Blackthorn had had the words, he would have said,
"No, Yabu-san. But I did see clearly for the first time what was really in her mind, the moment she gave the first order and Yoshinoka killed the first man." "Poem?" "It was a hideous, courageous, senseless, extraordinary ritual, where death's as formalized and inevitable as at a Spanish Inquisition, and all the deaths merely a prelude to Mariko's. Everyone's committed now, Yabu-san. You, me, the castle, Kiri, Ochiba, Ishido, everyone. All because she decided to do what she decided was necessary." "And when did she decide?"
"Long ago, ne? Or more correctly, Toranaga made the decision for her."
"So sorry, Yabu-san. Not words enough," he said.
Yabu hardly heard him. There was quiet on the battlements and in the avenue, everyone as motionless as statues. Then the avenue began to come alive, voices hushed, movements subdued, the sun beating down as each came out of his trance. Yabu sighed, filled with melancholia.
"It was a poem, Anjin-san," he said again, and left the battlements.
When Mariko had picked up the sword and gone forward alone, Blackthorn had wanted to leap down into the arena and rush at her assailant to protect her, to blow the grey's head off before she was slain. But with everyone, he had done nothing. Not because he was afraid. He was no longer afraid to die. Her courage had shown him the uselessness of that fear, and he had come to terms with himself long ago, on that night in the village with the knife.
I meant to drive the knife into my heart that night. Since then, my fear of death's been obliterated, just as she said it would be. Only by living at the edge of death can you understand the indescribable joy of life. I don't remember Omi stopping the thrust, only feeling reborn when I awoke the next dawn.
His eyes watched the dead, there in the avenue.
I could have killed that grey for her, he thought, and perhaps another, and perhaps several. But there would always have been another, and my death would not have tipped the scale a fraction. I'm not afraid to die, he told himself. I'm only appalled there's nothing I can do to protect her.
Greys were picking up bodies now, browns and greys treated with equal dignity. Other greys were streaming away, Kiama and his men among them, women and children and maids all leaving, dust in the avenue rising under their feet. He smelled the acrid, slightly fetid death smell mixed with the salt breeze, his mind eclipsed by her, the courage of her, the indefinable warmth that her fearless courage had given him. He looked up at the sun and measured it. 6 hours to sunset. He headed for the steps that led below.
Anjin-san, where go, please?
He turned back, his own greys forgotten. The captain was staring at him.
Ah, so sorry. Go there.
He pointed to the forecourt. The captain of greys thought a moment, then reluctantly agreed.
All right. Please you follow me.
In the forecourt, Blackthorn felt the brown's hostility towards his greys. Yabu was standing beside the gates, watching the men come back. Kiri and the Lady Sazuka were fanning themselves, a wet nurse feeding the infant. They were sitting on hastily laid out coverlets and cushions that had been placed in the shade on a veranda. Porters were huddled to one side, squatting in a tight, frightened group around the baggage and pack horses. He headed for the garden, but the guards shook their heads.
So sorry, this is out of bounds for the moment, Anjin-san.
Yes, of course, he said, turning away. The avenue was clearing now, though 500-odd greys still stayed, settling themselves, squatting or sitting cross-legged, in a wide semicircle, facing the gates. The last of the browns stalked back under the arch. Yabu called out,
"Close the gates and bar them!"
"Please excuse me, Yabu-san," the officer said, "but the lady told us said they were to be left open. We are to guard them against all men, but the gates are to be left open."
"You're sure?"
The officer bridled. He was a neat, bent-faced man in his 30s with a jutting chin, moustached and bearded.
"Please excuse me." "Of course I am sure."
"Thank you. I meant no offence, nay. Are you the senior officer here?"
"The Lady Toda honoured me with her confidence, yes. Of course, you are senior to me."
"I am in command, but you are in charge."
"Thank you, Yabu-san. But the Lady Toda commands here. You are senior officer. I would be honoured to be second to you, if you will permit it."
Yabu said balefully,
"It's permitted, Captain. I know very well who commands us here. Your name, please."
"Sumiyori Tabito."
"Wasn't the first grey Sumiyori also?"
"Yes, Yabu-san. He was my cousin."
"When you are ready, Captain Sumiyori, please call a meeting of all officers."
"Certainly, sir. With her permission."
Both men looked away as a lady hobbled into the forecourt. She was elderly and samurai and leaned painfully on a cane. Her hair was white, but her back was straight, and she went over to Kiritsubo, her maid holding a sunshade over her.
"Ah, Kiritsubo-san," she said formally. "I am Maeda Etz, Lord Maeda's mother, and I share the Lady Toda's views. With her permission, I would like to have the honour of waiting with her."
"Please sit down. You're welcome," Kiri said.
A maid brought another cushion, and both maids helped the old lady to sit.
"Ah, that's better. So much better.
Lady Eth said, biting back a groan of pain.
It's my joints. They get worse every day. Ah, that's a relief. Thank you.
Would you like cha?
First cha, then sake, Kiritsubo-san. Lots of sake. Such excitement, thirsty work, ne?
Other samurai women were detaching themselves from the crowds that were leaving, and they came back through the ranks of the greys into the pleasing shade. A few hesitated, and three changed their minds. But soon there were 14 ladies on the veranda, and two had brought children with them.
Please excuse me, but I am Achiko, Kiyama Nagamasa's wife, and I want to go home too.
A young girl was saying timidly, holding her little son's hand.
I want to go home to my husband. May I beg permission to wait too, please?
But Lord Kiyama will be furious with you, lady, if you stay here.
Oh, so sorry, Kiritsubo-san, but grandfather hardly knows me. I'm only wife to a very minor grandson. I'm sure he won't care, and I haven't seen my husband for months, and I don't care either what they say. Our lady's right, ne?
Quite right, Achiko-san,
old Lady Eth said, firmly taking charge.
Of course you're welcome, child. Come and sit by me. What's your son's name? What a fine boy you've got.
The ladies chorused their agreement, and another boy who was four piped up plaintively,
Please, I'm a fine boy too, ne?
Someone laughed, and all the ladies joined in.
You are indeed,
Lady Eth said, and laughed again. Kiri wiped away a tear.
There, that's better. I was getting far too serious, ne?
She chuckled.
Ah, ladies, I'm so honored to be allowed to greet you in her name. You must all be starving. And you're so right, Lady Etz. This is all thirsty work.
She sent maids for food and drink and introduced those ladies who needed introducing, admiring a fine kimono here or a special parasol there. Soon they were all chattering and happy and fluttering like so many parakeets.
How can a man understand women?
Sumiyori said blankly.
Impossible,
Yabu agreed.
One moment they're frightened and in tears, and the next? When I saw the Lady Mariko pick up Yoshinaka's sword, I thought I'd die with pride.
Yes, pity that last grey was so good. I'd like to have seen her kill. She'd have killed a lesser man.
Sumiyori rubbed his beard where the drying sweat irritated him.
What would you have done if you'd been him?
I would have killed her and then charged the Browns. Too much blood there. It was all I could do not to slaughter all the greys near me on the battlement.
It's good to kill sometimes. Very good. Sometimes it's very special. And then it's better than a lusting woman.
There was a burst of laughter from the ladies as the two little boys started strutting up and down importantly, their scarlet kimonos dancing.
It's good to have children here again. I thank all gods minor at Edo.
Yes.
Yabu was looking at the women speculatively.
I was wondering the same,
Sumiyori said quietly.
What's your answer?
There's only one now. If Ishido lets us go, fine. If Lady Mariko's seppuku is wasted, then we'll help those ladies into the void and begin the killing. They won't want to live.
Yabu said,
Some may want to.
You can decide that later, Yabu-san. It would benefit our master if they all commit seppuku here. And the children.
Yes.
Afterward, we'll man the walls and then open the gates at dawn. We'll fight till noon. That'll be enough. Then those who are left will come back inside and set fire to this part of the castle. If I'm alive, then I'd be honored if you'd be my second.
Of course.
Sumiyori grinned.
This is going to blow the realm apart, ne? All this killing and her seppuku. It'll spread like fire. It'll eat up Osaka, ne? You think that'll delay the exalted? Would that be our master's plan?
I don't know. Listen, Sumiyori-san. I'm going back to my house for a moment. Fetch me as soon as the lady comes back.
He walked over to Blackthorn, who sat musing on the main steps.
Listen, Anjin-san, Yabu said furtively. Perhaps I have a plan. Secret, ne? Secret. You understand?
Yes, understand. Bells told the hour change. The time rang in all their heads. The beginning of the hour of the monkey. 6 bells of the afternoon watch. 3 of the clock. Many turned to the sun and without thinking measured it.
What plan? Blackthorn asked. Talk later. Stay close by. Say nothing. Understand?
Yes. Yabu stalked out of the gateway with 10 browns. 20 greys attached themselves, and together they went down the avenue. His guest house was not far around the first corner. The greys stayed outside his gate. Yabu motioned the browns to wait in the garden, and he went inside alone.
It's impossible, Lord General,
Ochiba said.
You can't let a lady of her rank commit seppuku. So sorry, but you've been trapped.
I agree,
Lord Kiyama said forcefully.
With due humility, lady,
Ishido said,
whatever I said or didn't say doesn't matter an Eta's turd to her. She'd already decided, at least Torinaga had.
Of course he's behind it,
Kiyama said, as Ochiba recoiled at Ishido's uncouthness.
So sorry, but he's outsmarted you again. Even so, you can't let her commit seppuku.
Why?
Please, so sorry, Lord General. We must keep our voices down,
Ochiba said. They were waiting in the spacious antechamber of Lady Yodoko's sick room in the inner quarters of the dungeon, on the second floor.
I'm sure it wasn't your fault, and there must be a solution.
Kiyama said quietly,
you cannot let her continue her plan, Lord General, because that will inflame every lady in the castle.
Ishido glared at him.
You seem to forget a couple were shot by mistake, and that didn't create a ripple among them, except to stop any more escape attempts.
That was a terrible mistake, Lord General,
Ochiba said.
I agree, but we are at war. Torinaga's not yet in our hands, and until he's dead, you and the heir are in total danger.
So sorry. I'm not worried for myself, only for my son,
Ochiba said.
They've all got to be back here in 18 days. I advise you to let them all go.
That's an unnecessary risk. So sorry. We're not certain she means it. She does,
Kiyama told him contemptuously, despising Ishido's truculent presence in the opulent, overrich quarters that reminded him so clearly of the Taiko, his friend and revered patron.
She's samurai.
Yes, Ochiba said. So sorry, but I agree with Lord Kiyama. Mariko-san will do what she says. Then there's that hag Etz. Those Mahidas are a proud lot, ne?
Ishido walked over to the window and looked out.
They can all burn as far as I'm concerned. The Toda woman's Christian, eh? Isn't suicide against her religion a special sin?
Yes, but she'll have a second, so it won't be suicide.
And if she doesn't?
What?
Say she's disarmed and has no second.
How could you do that?
Capture her. Confine her with carefully chosen maids until Torinaga's across our borders.
Ishido smiled.
Then she can do what she wants. I'd be even delighted to help her.
How could you capture her?
Kiyama asked.
She'd always have time to commit seppuku, or to use her knife.
Perhaps. But say she could be captured and disarmed, and held for a few days. Isn't the few days vital? Isn't that why she's insisting on going today, before Torinaga crosses over our borders and castrates himself?
Could it be done?
Lady Ochiwa asked.
Possibly,
Ishido said. Kiyama pondered this.
In 18 days, Torinaga must be here. He could delay at the border for at the most another 4 days. She would have to be held for a week at the most.
Or forever, Ochiba said. Torinaga's delayed so much, I sometimes think he'll never come.
He has to by the 22nd day, Ishido said. Ah, lady, that was a brilliant, brilliant idea.
Surely that was your idea, Lord General.
Ochiba's voice was soothing, though she was very tired from a sleepless night.
What about Lord Sudara and my sister? Are they with Toranaga now?
No, lady, not yet. They will be brought here by sea.
She is not to be touched, Ochiba said, or her child.
Her child is direct heir of Toranaga, who's heir to the Minowaras. My duty to the heir, lady, makes me point this out again.
My sister is not to be touched, nor is her son.
As you wish.
She said to Kiyama,
Sire, how good a Christian is Mariko-san?
Pure,
Kiyama replied at once.
You mean about suicide being a sin? I think she would honor that, or her eternal soul is forfeit, lady. But I don't know if... Then there's a simpler solution,
Ishido said without thinking.
Command the High Priest of the Christians to order her to stop harassing the legal rulers of the Empire. He doesn't have the power, Kiyama said.
Then he added, his voice even more barbed,
That's political interference, something you've always been bitterly against, and rightly. It seems Christians interfere only when it suits them,
Ishido said.
It was only a suggestion.
The inner door opened, and a doctor stood there. His face was grave, and exhaustion aged him.
So sorry, lady, she's asking for you.
Is she dying?
Ishido asked.
She's near death, Lord General, yes, but when, I don't know.
Ochiba hurried across the large room and through the inner door, her blue kimono clinging, the skirt swaying gracefully. Both men watched her. The door closed. For a moment, the two men avoided each other's eyes. Then Kiyama said,
You really think Lady Toda could be captured?
Yes,
Ishido told him, watching the door. Ochiba crossed this even more opulent room and knelt beside the futons. Maids and doctors surrounded them. Sunlight seeped through the bamboo shutters and skittered off the gold and red inlaid carvings of the beams and posts and doors. Yodoko's bed was surrounded by decorative inlaid screens. She seemed to be sleeping, her bloodless face settled within the hood of her Buddhist robe, her wrists thin, the veins knotted. And Ochiba thought how sad it was to become old. Age was so unfair to women.
Not to men, only to women. Gods protect me from old age, she prayed. Buddha protect my son, and put him safely into power, and protect me only as long as I'm capable of protecting him and helping him.
She took Yodoko's hand, honoring her.
Lady? O-chan?
Yodoko whispered, using her nickname.
Yes, lady. Ah, how pretty you are. So pretty. You always were.
The hand went up and caressed the beautiful hair, and Ochiba was not offended by the touch, but pleased as always, liking her greatly.
So young and beautiful and sweet-smelling. How lucky the Taiko was. Are you in pain, lady? Can I get you something? Nothing, nothing. I just wanted to talk.
The old eyes were sunken, but had lost none of their shrewdness.
Send the others away.
Ochiba motioned them to leave, and when they were alone, she said,
Yes, lady. Listen, my darling. Make the Lord General let her go. He can't, lady, or all the other hostages will leave, and we'll lose strength. The regents all agree,
Ochiba said.
Regents,
Yodoko said, with a thread of scorn.
Do you agree? Yes, lady. And last night you said she was not to go. Now you must let her go, or others will follow her seppuku, and you and our son will be befouled because of Ishido's mistake. The Lord General's loyal, lady. Torunaga isn't. So sorry. You can trust Lord Torunaga. Not him.
Machiba shook her head.
So sorry, but I'm convinced Torunaga's committed to become shogun and will destroy our son. You're wrong. He said it 1,000 times. Other daimyos are trying to use him for their own ambitions. They always have. Torunaga was the Taiko's favorite. Torunaga has always honored the heir. Torunaga's Minowara. Don't be swayed by Ishido or the regents. They've their own karmas, their own secrets, O-chan. Why not let her go? It's all so simple. Forbid her the sea. Then she can always be delayed somewhere inside our borders. She's still in your general's net, and Kiri and all the others, ne? She'll be surrounded by greys. Think like the Taiko would, or like Torunaga would. You and our son are being pulled into...
The words trailed off, and her eyelids began to flutter. The old lady gathered her remaining strength and continued.
Mariko-san could never object to guards. I know she means what she says. Let her go. Of course that was considered, lady,
Ochiba said, her voice gentle and patient.
But outside the castle, Torunaga has secret bands of samurai, hidden in and around Osaka. We don't know how many, and he has allies. We're not sure who. She might escape. Once she goes, all the others would follow her at once, and we'd lose a great security. You agreed, Yodoko-chan. Don't you remember? So sorry, but I asked you last night. Don't you remember? Yes, I remember, child,
Yodoko said, her mind wandering.
Oh, how I wish the Lord Taiko was here again to guide you.
The old lady's breathing was becoming labored.
Can I give you some cha or sake? Cha, yes, please. Some cha.
She helped the old one to drink.
Thank you, child.
The voice was feebler now, the strain of conversation speeding the dying.
Listen, child. You must trust Torunaga. Marry him. Barter with him for the succession. No. No,
Ochiba said, shocked.
Yeman could rule after him. Then the fruit of your new marriage, after our son. The sons of our son will honorably swear eternal fidelity to this new Torunaga line. Torunaga's always hated the Taiko. You know that, lady. Torunaga is the source of all the trouble. For years, ne? Him. And you? What about your pride, child? He's the enemy, our enemy. You've two enemies, child. Your pride and the need to have a man to compare to our husband. Please be patient with me. You're young and beautiful and fruitful and deserve a husband. Torunaga's worthy of you. You of him. Torunaga is the only chance Yeamon has. No, he's the enemy. He was our husband's greatest friend and most loyal vassal. Without Torunaga. Don't you see? It was Torunaga's help. Don't you see? You could manage him. So sorry, but I hate him. He disgusts me, Yodoko-chan. Many women. What was I saying? Oh, yes. Many women marry men who disgust them. Praise be to Buddha, I never had to suffer that.
The old woman smiled briefly. Then she sighed. It was a long, serious sigh, and went on for too long, and Ochiba thought the end had come. But the eyes opened a little,
and a tiny smile appeared again.
Nay? Yes. Will you? Please? I will think about it.
The old fingers tried to tighten.
I beg you, promise me you'll marry Torunaga, and I will go to Buddha, knowing that the Taiko's line will live forever, like his name. His name will live for...
The tears ran freely down Ochiba's face as she cradled the listless hand. Later the eyes trembled, and the old woman whispered,
You must let Akechi Mariko go. Don't let her reap vengeance on us for what the Taiko did to her father.
Ochiba was caught unaware.
What?
There was no answer. Later Yoriko began mumbling.
Dear Yeimon, hello my darling son. Oh, you're such a fine boy. But you've so many enemies. So foolish, so... Aren't you just an illusion, too? Isn't...
A spasm racked her. Ochiba held onto the hand and caressed it.
Namu Amida Butsu,
she whispered in homage. There was another spasm. Then the old woman said clearly,
Forgive me, O-chan. There is nothing to forgive, lady. So much to forgive.
The voice became fainter, and the light began to fade from her face.
Listen, promise about Torunaga, Ochiba-sama. Important. Please, you can trust him.
The old eyes were beseeching her, willing her. Ochiba did not want to obey, yet knew that she should obey. Her mind was unsettled by what had been said about Akechi Mariko, and still resounded with the Taiko's words, repeated 10,000 times.
You can trust Yodoko-sama, O-chan. She's the wise one. Never forget it. She's right most times, and you can always trust her with your life, and my son's life, and mine.
Ochiba conceded. She stopped abruptly. The light of Yodoko-sama flickered a final time and went out.
Namu Amida Butsu.
Ochiba touched the hand to her lips, and she bowed and laid the hand back on the coverlet and closed the eyes, thinking about the Taiko's death, the only other death she had witnessed so closely. That time, Lady Yodoko had closed the eyes, as was a wife's privilege, and it had been in this same room, Torunaga waiting outside, as Ishido and Kiyama were now outside, continuing a vigil that had begun the day before.
But why send for Torunaga, Lord? She had asked. You should rest.
I'll rest when I'm dead, O-chan, the Taiko had said. I must settle the succession, finally, while I've the strength.
So Torunaga had arrived, strong, vital, exuding power. The four of them were alone then. Ochiba, Yodoko, Torunaga, and Nakamura, the Taiko, the Lord of Japan, lying on his deathbed, all of them waiting for the orders that would be obeyed.
So, Tora-san,
the Taiko had said, welcoming him with the nickname Gorudo had given Torunaga long ago, the deep-set eyes peering up out of the tiny, withered simian face that was set on an equally tiny body. A body that had had the strength of steel until a few months ago, when the wasting began.
I'm dying, from nothing into nothing, but you'll be alive, and my son's helpless.
Not helpless, sire. All the daimyos will honor your son as they honor you.
The Taiko laughed.
Yes, they will. Today, while I'm alive.
Ah, yes.
But how do I make sure Yeimon will rule after me?
Appoint a council of regents, sire.
Regents,
the Taiko said scornfully.
Perhaps I should make you my heir, and let you judge if Yeimon's worthy to follow you.
I would not be worthy to do that. Your son should follow you.
Yes, and Gorudo's sons should have followed him.
No, they broke the peace. A
and you stamped them out on my orders.
You held the Emperor's mandate. They rebelled against your lawful mandate, sire. Give me your orders now, and I will obey them.
That's why I called you here.
Then the Taiko said,
It's a rare thing to have a son at 57, and a foul thing to die at 63. If he's an only son, and you've got no kin, and you're Lord of Japan, eh?
Yes, Torunaga said.
Perhaps it would have been better if I'd never had a son. Then I could pass the realm on to you as we agreed. You've more sons than a Portuguese got lice.
Karma. The Taiko had laughed, and a string of spittle, flecked with blood, seeped out of his mouth. With great care, Yodoko wiped the spittle away, and he smiled up at his wife.
Thank you, Yojin. Thank you.
Then the eyes turned onto Ochiba herself, and Ochiba had smiled back, but his eyes weren't smiling now, just probing, wondering, pondering the never-dared-to-be-asked question that she was sure was forever in his mind.
Is Yeomon really my son? Kama, Ochan, me?
It was gently said, but Ochiba's fear that he would ask her directly racked her, and tears glistened in her eyes.
No need for tears, Ochan. Life's only a dream within a dream.
The old man said. He lay for a moment musing, then he peered at Torunaga again, and with a sudden unexpected warmth for which he was famous, said,
Hey, old friend, what a life we've had, nay? All the battles, fighting side by side, together unbeatable. We did the impossible, nay. Together we humbled the mighty and spat on their upturned asses while they grovelled for more. Us, we did it. A peasant and a Minowara.
The old man chuckled.
Listen, a few more years and I'd have smashed the garlic eaters properly. Then with Korean legions and our own Japanese legions, a sharp thrust up to Peking, and me on the dragon throne of China. Then I'd have given you Japan, which you want, and I'd have what I want.
The voice was strong, belying the inner fragility.
A peasant can straddle the dragon throne with face and honor. Not like here, eh?
China and Japan are different, yes, sire.
Yes. They're wise in China. They're the first of a dynasty's always a peasant or the son of a peasant, and the throne's always taken by force with bloody hands. No hereditary caste there. Isn't that China's strength?
Again the laugh.
Force and bloody hands and peasant. That's me. Eh?
Yes, but you're also samurai. You changed the rules here. You're the first of a dynasty.
I always liked you, Tora-san.
The old man sipped cha contentedly.
Yes. Think of it. Me on the dragon throne. Think of that. Emperor of China. Yodoko, Empress. And after her, Ochiba the Fair. And after me, Yeomon. And China and Japan forever joined together, as they should be. Ah, it would have been so easy. Then with our legions and Chinese hordes, I'd stab northwest and south, and, like 10th-class whores, the empires of all the earth would lie panting in the dirt, their legs spread wide for us to take what we want. We're unbeatable. You and I were unbeatable. Japanese are unbeatable. Of course we are. We know the whole point of life, ne?
Yes. The eyes glittered strangely.
What is it?
Duty, discipline, and death, Torunaga replied. Again a chuckle, the old man seemingly tinier than ever, more wizened than ever, and then, with an equal suddenness for which he was also famous, all the warmth left him.
The regent?
He asked, his voice venomous.